Do we care enough about FPL on our FPL podcast to talk about FPL at all?
I don't mind. I'm not going to be bringing a lot to the table, but I can certainly give what I've got.
And welcome to another episode of the Corridor of Uncertainty podcast. It's been another long month, we have to admit, but we're back for episode 9. And I'm here not only with my co-host Jamie, but we have a guest as well. We have the famous Chase, FPL Chase, or as we know him in real life, Robert. We'll kick off with you, Robert. How are you doing, mate?
Thanks, guys. It's an honor and my pleasure. Famous. Yeah, thanks for the invitation, Simon.
Pleasure to have you on. Jamie, how about you? How you doing, mate?
Yeah, all good, thank you. I don't know what to say, really. Just normal, bumbling away. Looking forward to this. How are you?
Nice. Yeah, I can't complain. I'm having some fun with Robert trying to build our own XG models as a bit of like a hobby project. So that's been taking up a lot of my brain space, but yeah, pretty fun. Looking forward to this as well. So listeners, we have a few things on our plate today. As usual, we don't know exactly what they're going to be, but we have a loose idea. So we're going to chat to Robert a bit about his kind of like history with FPL. He's got a pretty interesting history and has talked to quite a few of the top managers and learned from them over the years. So we're going to kind of dig into that. We're going to talk about the Hive Mind team. I'll explain what that is when we get to it. And we'll probably touch on a bit of FPL, I guess, as well. As it's purportedly an FPL podcast, we should probably talk about the upcoming like how to approach the rest of the season, as it's pretty weird. And I think probably one of the more interesting points in FPL recently, and then who knows where we'll get to. We'll see. Robert, why don't you give us like a bit of an intro for those of you that don't know you? Kind of how long you've been playing, who you are, a bit of background, and just kind of kick us off like that.
Yeah. So this is actually my 10th season, and two of them were unfinished, so let's say 8. I think I have been playing this game long enough to be good at it. I'm still not good at it, so I don't know. I'm doing everything in my power to be better and better each season. Let's see how this season pans out. So the start was pretty grim, but it looks a lot better now. Let's see. And my history, I don't know, so I think it's the story like for most of the guys playing this game. So I was introduced to the game by my friends, by my mates, a long time ago. And I wanted to beat them, so I was naturally looking for edges. And this is how I found first the Fantasy Football Scout site. So I joined the chat as well, and there I have I've stumbled up on this link to a Facebook group from Trigger Lips, Nick Cummings, and this is when I entered the Transfer Hub Facebook group.
The infamous,
yeah. I think it was 2014, roughly. I don't remember. I got to know some of these legends of the game through this group, like Abdul or Fabio or even Mikkel. So we were all there when Mikkel started with his transfer algorithm. Those were fun times. It was very, very outlandish stuff when it started, as you can imagine, and we have all learned since then, I would say.
I think that's quite interesting that it was seen as so outlandish. But like, what a model predicting FPL. How did the process of like convincing go? Because obviously you're pretty convinced of analytics now, as a quite a few people, including a lot of people who are in that group. So what? How did that like look in the group in terms of analytics gaining a foothold?
Good question. To be honest, I think at the start it was more about the heuristics of the game, like what were you know the rules of the thumbs, you know, and how to navigate different situations, stuff like that. The analytical part, I don't think it was an integral part of it all. It sort of happened over the years. And this was way before XG was publicly available. So we were really just looking at stuff like shots and shots in the box, and those were already, you know, like stats. So it has moved from my experience. All of the field, it has moved considerably. The understanding of the data, all the pitfalls and interactions, I would say it's we have come a long way, I think all of us, in understanding football data. And it's not only about FPL, it's in general, I think.
Yeah, it's definitely true. I remember because I've mentioned before, I was on kind of like football analytics before I was on FPL, and I remember the really early days of XG when like people were first publishing it as a metric, because there was all these kind of like shots plus type models using like shots on target percentage and trying to infer something about shot quality from conversion rates and stuff like that. It was, yeah, super Wild West time. Not quite the same now. Jamie, I don't know if you want to jump in at any point. Just go for it.
I feel like I kind of messed school for FPL, you know. I was just like playing on my own, and like I was like playing against my workmates, but like none of them were interested in it in the way that I was, and like making these kind of models that were very outlandish, like Rob says, to begin with, and then they kind of got more reasonable as time went on, and I put more time into them and stuff. But I do feel like, I think I've said this before, like I've just missed kind of some lessons on like the fundamental ways to like think about and approach FPL. So I was really interested in the Meet the Manager series when they came out, but I kind of was generally left quite unsatisfied by them, because they tended to kind of like fall into the same grooves every time in terms of like the exact same stuff being covered, and I was always waiting for like stuff to come out that was I hadn't heard yet. And I'm really interested in what Robert said about like how these heuristics were developed you know, over time. Like let's say before analytics, there was kind of like this general way of playing, and it's me imagining something that doesn't exist. But you know, do you feel like there's an agreed upon kind of set of like not rules, but like rules of thumb, Robert, that like people kind of came to, you know, by working together and thinking about the game, that maybe have like kind of passed out of public knowledge now, you know, and it's just there is kind of only you guys that maybe are actually holding on to that stuff.
No. No, nothing like that. It's not like some secret mystery group or anything.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. If it is, you're keeping it secret.
I don't think it was articulated at any point as some sort of list of heuristics or something like that. Mm. To be very honest, I think to be good at FPL, I think you need some experience with the game. It's the game doesn't really. We all know there is a lot of noise in it, and it responds in very special ways. But I think some experience with actual playing helps you with your decisions. Maybe even if you are not. As I said, if you are not articulating this stuff explicitly somewhere on, I don't know, on P piece of sheet or whatever. I think your instincts will get better over time. Yeah. I mean, if you're paying attention to your decisions and maybe not immediate outcomes, but you are paying attention to what led you into maybe difficult situations, navigating your team and stuff. I think you can learn a lot of lessons from your own game. Mm-hmm. And then for me personally, I learned a lot from other managers. So I was a huge fan now it's going to be difficult to pronounce it correctly, but let's say Villa Ronca. Yeah. And there was this FISO chat I stumbled up on again, I don't know how many years ago. And guys were pretty much discussing all of his moves. So it was pre game week, like we were guessing like what he's going to do with his team and why it makes sense to do this and do that. And then the reaction, you know, like what he really did and what was probably his motivation, you know, to navigate his team in this particular way or anything. And although we have never talked to Villa, any of us, I think we have learned a lot just by this interaction. You know, like it was like a very, very intense exchange on how to approach game weeks and transfers and the general overall strategy. I think I learned a lot. I think I learned a lot just by listening to what other people had to say about a particular team. In this case, it was Villa's team and what he could do with the team. So this was a good, school.
Yeah, that sounds like it would be. I can definitely believe that.
It might be worth interesting, like, to dig into some of the specifics. Like, what were some of the lessons that you learned? I mean, I know it was a while ago. If you can't remember, I always find it kind of interesting when you look at these like really, really top managers who are like just that, like they're actually quite a large chunk above everyone else because of like the tail of a distribution. And like you say, observing them can teach you a lot. So what were like some of the things, if you remember, that you learned from the exercise about how to play the game?
From him particularly, I have learned his patience. Like, he was absurdly patient. The way he navigated weeks where we were, you know, all suffering from FOMO, it was something that blew my mind. And it was, I think it was one of his strongest traits over the years. I think one particular thing I'm sort of using as a heuristic to this day is after each gaming, I will just look at my team and try to find ways how to save free transfer, as I think that's the first idea I have. How can I save free transfer here? And only then I'm starting thinking about transfers. So I don't know. I think value of free transfers, it's something that but I think it has been said lots of times already, so it's nothing new. But it's also the idea of thinking about it, you know.
Yeah, I've heard that about him. I would love to have actually studied his play better because he sounds like my kind of guy. That's the kind of thing that I would. That's like, I'm just loving the sound of him being like absurdly patient. That just that sounds so good to me. So
yeah, it definitely fits with your play style, Jamie.
Yeah, slow play. I mean, I've still got Sun in my team, so you know, I'm doing my best here.
It was generally a very very frequent theme that we have been all like, okay, so this team is he's not going to make it this week, you know. And he had some of the most absurd game week scores when his team looked properly shit on paper. And I think I have learned to appreciate the variance from this. Like, when you observe it, like anything can happen. Really, anything can happen, and it's you should not give in to your emotions when you're looking at your team sheet and you feel like, okay, I need to do something right now because this team sucks, because it sucked, I don't know, two weeks ago, and it will definitely suck this week again. I think this is very dangerous thinking about playing this game.
Yeah. I mean, I think that we, as a community, as a player base, we tend to overstate the kind of the appeal of someone we don't have and understate the potential of someone that we do have, right? Like, it's even if you've, as long as you've got someone who's still getting minutes and still kind of like pretty much the player that you thought he was when you bought him, and we assume that we're kind of making reasonable decisions when we buy them, it's like that idea of a transfer is you're not just getting the potential of the person that you're getting in, but you're losing the potential of the person that you're getting out. You know, and if that person isn't like injured or out of favor, then there's a real kind of potential debit that's coming along there. And it sounds like Villarronca was someone who was prepared to like almost always take the patient approach when it comes to whether there's like a luxury transfer or someone that you'd like to have. Like, I don't know what an example would be just now, but like in my team, for example, I took Pookie on my wild card in game week, whatever it was, 19 or whatever, and he's just been sitting there. And like this week I ended up having to play him, and like he got an assist or whatever, like for some terrible cross. And or maybe this is last week, you know, don't ask me to get the details correct. But it's that kind of thing, isn't it? It's like these people that are gonna, like, there's nothing actually wrong with them, even if they are extremely unsexy, you know, compared to some other options that exist, you know.
Yeah.
I think that's definitely true. I think it's definitely like a I don't like my team emotion that can drive people to kind of make decisions which aren't necessarily like in the best interest of FPL. One thing I did want to dig into, I find this is something that's been on my mind quite a lot, is like more and more in the analytics community, like we're kind of like leaning pretty heavily on reviews, like model projections for players, much more so than kind of any other prediction model. Like even I'm like really leaning towards like using review more than my model, because it's just a better model. And like given that, where are the edges? So you can kind of like use like solvers or optimizers, and they'll always be quite greedy. And then you have the kind of like flexibility of like having your resources able to deploy. How do you think about playing the game where you have like really solid like points projection numbers kind of available to everyone?
I don't know. Honestly, the solvers and optimization stuff that entered this season, it's uncharted territory for me personally. I feel like a dinosaur. I need to catch up, but I don't know. Well, finding the edge is tougher and tougher, as we all know, and particularly these past two seasons. It's also not about. I think what has worked before is not really working right now. We all need to be a lot more flexible, and what's the plan, you know, for next, I don't know, 6, 7, 8 game weeks. It's just it's just maximizing doubles and minimizing blanks. You know, I mean, we are in the stage of the season where you are not picking best players. Like you are just picking players who have more fixtures than the others, basically, or that's the primary targets. And we are all kind of just, you know, trying to find our way through the schedule. So it's not the investment game. It probably is at the start of the season where you want to find the best investments really quick and buy them as soon as possible. And yeah, with the idea to hold them for I don't know how many game weeks to come. It's not the case anymore, or at least I don't feel this way anymore. I don't think about the game at the moment this way anymore. And to be honest, I think we have deadline in a week. I have no idea what I'm going to do with my team, and I think it will be the same maybe for next few days still. This game is really now about the make your decision as late as possible. It's probably a good heuristic.
Just to clarify, like when you're saying like nowadays, is this like thinking about the current context of COVID and just players like going missing all the time and fixtures being postponed? That definitely does change things, doesn't it? And like, I think it sort of, for me at least, it simplifies things a bit, doesn't it? Because it's like you can switch off. Well, okay, maybe you guys can tell me if I'm wrong, Simon. Maybe you're approaching it differently, but for me, I'm just totally like switching off much more and making very like decisions based on very, very simple criteria. You know, like who's definitely going to play. Who do I need to sell because like they've got COVID or their game is going to be postponed, and like who's got doubles coming up and stuff like that. And that's really like the extent of the thought that I'm putting into it. So I always welcome periods of FPL that are like that personally, because I tend to struggle when there's like lots of options that I can take and I'm gonna maybe beat myself up about making the wrong one. Yeah, I don't know how that sounds to you guys about this season. Like I've been like relatively enjoying it, even though it's been very kind of sad that they're making people play football while there's a disease going around and stuff like that.
Yeah, I find that quite interesting. But I don't know about you, but I found myself kind of getting quite involved in looking at different scenarios because I know that I'm going to probably have to react to information at pretty short notice, and so I want to make sure I've kind of like thought through a lot of the possibilities before. And I also think we're in a kind of like, because there's been so many postponements, we're in a situation where we're going to have more opportunities than we are ability to jump on them, which kind of comes back to valuing a free transfer, which we touched on earlier. And it's really a case of like keeping your powder dry. So last week, obviously, the way it turned out was like pure variance, but I avoided jumping on Emmanuel Dennis to roll a transfer with the idea that I would use it in like 25 to jump on a double then, or 26, or I can't remember the exact thing, but it is a question of like, okay, well, this is a double game week and I could buy an extra fixture, but I'm probably going to need to buy another fixture down the line, so I'm going to like keep my powder dry here. And I don't know, I think it's quite complicated, especially when you chuck in the fact that we've like most people have got four or maybe even five chips to play in like 10 to 15 weeks. And I think there's going to be quite a lot of variation in the strategy as well, and I think a lot of it also depends on where your team's at. But I think it's probably going to be one of the more kind of like differentiated and interesting periods of FPO for like an extended period.
I think, what you have touched upon, that we basically have chosen to ignore a player with double game week. I mean, that doesn't happen really often, but it's increasingly more frequent this season. I think it was also the case when Everton, that they were supposed to have double. And it's now, it looks like it's a lot more complex to think about, okay, I'm not going to invest in this double because I expect better double in 2 game weeks time or 3 game weeks time or whatever. It's interesting from the perspective of playing the game and picking your strategy. Is definitely interesting, and it's definitely made the game more challenging. But I think it's also the entire Christmas period and the January period was very. There was a lot of sick variants in it, and I'm not sure I like this much level of variance. I think it's too much for my personal liking. I mean, I was on the lucky side but I can imagine I would be on the unlucky side, and it's just too much.
How do you kind of like psychologically think about variance after you've been playing so long? I imagine you've had your fair share of like extreme variance on both ends. So like, how do you like not get stressed around FPL if you don't get stressed around FPL? It didn't make any sense.
I still do a lot. That's why I'm trying to be offline during the weekends, because it's difficult to face, you know, the roller coaster of each game week. I prefer just to look at the final result. Yeah, I don't know. I think I had two seasons where I was really, really, really lucky. One of them was, I think it was two seasons ago or three seasons ago, where I ended up in 2K to 2.7, but it doesn't matter. So the FPL review told me that I wasn't lucky, but I felt that way. I felt the way I was lucky. And this season, I think I'm so far, it looks like I'm very lucky, I don't know. It's the magnitude of variance in past few seasons. It's not just about how the actual weeks pan out with the players you have, but you know, all these postponements and changes in schedule. It's another level. It's added level. You normally don't have. How many double game weeks will we have this season? I don't know. I've lost count.
Probably
a lot. I think there's something like 15 unscheduled fixtures.
Yeah,
at the moment.
It's mad. So I definitely don't remember anything like this, and I doubt anyone has.
Yeah, it's pretty wild. It's I don't know. I really enjoy this. I wish there was a way to just like build in this kind of like absolute chaos without there being a pandemic.
Yeah. Yeah. Cool. It's like just you playing, you know, like none of all the sane people go and play some other game, and you're still there.
I mean, it's that's what it takes to win FPL.
Yeah, class.
Is there anything else you want to ask, Jamie?
One thing that I am interested in is like your general process for decision making. So like, you know, just maybe if you could, like, I don't know how easy it is to try and like summarize like what kind of I imagine I'd struggle to do this myself, but like what kind of a approach you take to the season, like when you're picking your team to begin, your chip strategy, like, or your game week process, and how you're kind of evaluating like what you're going to do. You know, you already shared you kind of have this habit of like looking at your team and trying to see if you can save a transfer. Like, how much time do you spend on it? When do you spend the time? How do you like how I was another like side question, I was interested in how you found like using review or using a model and like trying to incorporate that into your play, because obviously you were playing successfully before that came along, and then now you're playing successfully with that. So yeah, like just interested in anything you want to share about your kind of process and approach to how you actually play it, so you can get some detail there.
Tough one. I think in general, when new game week comes along, I will look at the team, and if I cannot save a transfer, then I'm obviously looking for the weak links. It can be anything like injured players, suspensions, whatever. And then I'm looking at my next stop is usually FDR ticker. And currently I'm using my own. But there are lots of them, and a lot of quality stuff out there. And I just want to get, you know, some idea like which teams have a really favorable schedule over, let's say, next six, eight game weeks, and who could be players to target. Because, you know, the schedule is the most important thing, and it's it should not be changing, unlike player availability and stuff like that. So that's like the heart, that's like the set in stone thing I look at first. And then obviously I consult a lot of FPL review, and I'm also Mikael Tokvam's patron, so I'm looking at his algorithm as well. And these are the broad brushstrokes in my the decision making every week. And then I go into the niche things. So I would either look at the data directly, or I would actually I do it a lot of time. I look at the ratings from sites like WhoScored and SofaScore. So any player I'm targeting, I just want to consult whether they are doing the right things, you know, whether there are algorithms saying that that they are playing well or not in general, just not only the statistics as we know them. And then I'm basically waiting for all the team news to come in. So I spend most of my time each game week just checking the news, checking the availability news, any rumors. And I'm particularly cautious with the players I'm transferring in, because obviously when you already have somebody in your team, I mean, he's already there, so it you could pick them in the 11 or bench them, but they're already there. But the transfers in, I'm very cautious about, and I literally sometimes just Google the top latest tweets with the name of the player I'm targeting, just not to miss anything, any major story. And that's usually my last stop, my last check before I commit to the transfer. So that's basically my normal preparation for game week, although I have never thought about it this way, but yeah, just talking as it comes.
Yeah, now that you realize. Yeah, and what about like things like effective ownership, or even just like, do you like to kind of consult other people's opinions on moves that you're going to make? And yeah, I know we've chatted about moves in advance sometimes before and stuff like that. You know, is that something that you place a lot of stock in? And you know, like ownership, captaincy decisions and stuff like that, do you have a kind of tendency just to go with like review, or yeah, like anything standing out there?
The effective ownership, I think I was an advocate of effective ownership, or stronger advocate before. I'm not as much checking it this season, I have to say, at least not for transfers. I mean, no, it doesn't really enter my mind. Like if I'm picking somebody, let's say from Arsenal, it doesn't change my mind that, I don't know, Saka is more owned than Lacazette, or vice versa, or anything like that. I mean, it's just I look at the players and their quality, and the EO is not major consideration. When it comes to captaincy, that's something different. So we are having double game weeks upon us, and it doesn't take much to imagine that there will be heavy effective ownership influence, like that there will be players very popular, and it's probably a good idea to own them. I'm not going to name like anyone, but you know, I think you know what I mean. Yes, and that's different. So I definitely do think about navigating captaincy. So a lot of my thinking about future transfers revolves around who am I going to captain in the next game weeks. Yeah. And effective ownership is definitely a major consideration in this particular sense. But yeah.
Yeah, nice. Cool. Thank you. What about this question about using models like to help with decisions? Do you remember how that sort of became something that were like became kind of integrated into the way you play and how successful you were at, like, you know, I think there's a way to play without putting hard quantifiable predictions on player points, and you can play well without doing that.
Can you though?
you can do just fine. But once you start doing that, it's very hard to make decisions that are actually contrary to those numbers. So how did you find this kind of, like, was there any dissonance there in trying to integrate this numeric, you know, probability-based approach with expected points and stuff like that versus the way that you had kind of happily been playing and doing well at, you know, prior to the models becoming pretty prevalent?
I don't think I have a process refined around numerical numbers. I mean, I look at the EV. It's a large portion of the signal I'm taking each game week, but I introduce a lot of my own judgment at the end of the day. I think the models and in general, it's getting better, and I think it's probably even, I don't know, I think if you're following EV rigorously, you will probably be a better player than me, or I don't know. But I do not find it as satisfying. If I don't know if you understand, if I would do decisions purely by EV calculations each game week, the game would lose some of its appeal for me personally. But maybe that's because I don't know. I've been playing this game and I have been thinking about this game differently before, and I don't know. Like at the start of the season, I have definitely not behaved like I should have according to models. I have done some pretty poor decisions, on the other hand, I think I have done some really good decisions, like getting on Reece James very early, when it wasn't super clear that he would be nailed, and also wasn't super clear that what was his, I don't know, numerical expectation. There was a lot of noise around it, let's say, on margin of error. But there were other signals that told me that, boy, this is a player I want to invest in as soon as possible. And yeah, of course, he got injured or something right after I got him on my wildcard. It was, I think, game week 5 or something like that, as it happens. But I think at the start of the season, I'm not as much looking at EV models. I think there is a lot of unknowns, and as I said, it's a process, and I'm sure it's different for everyone else. But I think I'm introducing a lot of my judgment, which is both good and bad.
Yeah, just on the like following a model blindly, I never ran it for the whole season. I'm kind of planning to next year. No promises, listeners. Of just kind of blindly following the review suggestions, and you notice that when you kind of like do it with like no human override, that you end up in some like pretty like weird and difficult spots that are quite easy to avoid. And I think it definitely does make the game more boring, but I think it's there's still like a lot of skill to be able to find the best path, given like how much uncertainty you have coming down the line, isn't just a case of like computer wins FPL type situation.
Yeah, totally. That's right. There is a skill in kind of combining that with a bit of foresight and a bit of judgment, and not just taking the immediate kind of prize that's there, but kind of like having the kind of smarts to say, well, maybe this is uncertain that this game even goes ahead, and then, you know, blah, blah, blah. Like, you know, there may be rescheduled games and they've not actually been factored into the FPL review predictions yet. So like, you know that they're coming down the line for certain other players and stuff. So yeah, there's definitely is still skill involved in it. Like,
yeah, even in a normal season, I mean, it's kind of what we it's what we touched on when we had that interview with Abdul, of like how we end up in like situations where you just like suddenly can't get to a player who's emerged and things like that. And then obviously, yeah, like you say, like this season, you want to really emphasize flexibility as like having a lot more value than usual.
Yep, for sure. Yeah, and it was just making me think of like, there is a bit of a game within a game for some people that are playing FPL, and it's like trying to maximize your massive data points on FPL review. And like, that is a good strategy because that's going to correlate very well with points. But it is like, you know, the person that does the best at that will not have just followed a kind of unthinking approach every week by like doing the top recommendation on the site.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You know, they'll have had to have exercised like judgment. They'll have had to have waited when the recommendation was to not wait and all that sort of stuff. So it is like kind of an interesting question. You did sort of fantastically well, did you not, on one of the measures one season recently, Rob, on FPL review, or am I wrong?
I think I was in top 10 in massive data rank, 7th maybe. I don't remember it correctly.
Was that like last year? Was it the year before?
It was the year before.
Right, okay, yeah. I mean, that's you know, because it sounds like you are not using it kind of religiously. You're not using it in an unthinking way. You're not afraid to override it with your own judgment. But you still did excellently with it.
Yeah, it keeps surprising me as well. I don't know, but this season it's not so rosy. So this season I have deviated a lot, and it shows also on massive data rank. I think it's genuinely a very good indication of your decision making.
Yeah,
I wouldn't hang up on it like too much, but it's definitely something. I think it's a very important feedback to your decision making, and I'm all for it. I mean, if anyone wants to have a game in the game, why not? It's a good game to have. Yeah, as you say, just blindly following the model, I don't think you would actually end up that high in retrospective evaluation of your play. So there is a lot of good decisions and a lot of judgment.
Yeah, for sure. You know, one thing I was interested in, you talked about how it might be kind of maybe not as interesting for you just to follow the model recommendations. Like, what do you actually enjoy about FPL? Like, what attracts you to the game? What keeps you playing? And what is it like that you, what's good for you in terms of FPL? What did you like about it?
You're going to make him quit, Jamie, with a question like that.
Yeah, I know. I don't know how I'd answer this just now, but you know, I figure I'll make him answer it.
I don't know. I back in the days, I just wanted to be, you know, as best as I could, like achieve the top 1,000 rank or something like that. You know, top 100. I was really trying to be that good. But I'm not sure. I'm not sure. I mean, it definitely changes, and I'm not sure I'm taking FPL as seriously as I have before. Now it's sort of like it's an environment where I'm living, and I'm actually using FPL now as a vehicle to learn some more useful stuff, and that's why also the strong inclination to using stats and to using tools and things like that, to use analytics and to learn about analytics more. It's not necessarily means to an end for me. Actually, it's not about FPL anymore. And just FPL is just the environment where I sort of grew up, and I like to play the game. I obviously I like when I bring somebody like Bruno and he smashes in I don't know how many points in double game week. I mean, it's very satisfying.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
I don't know. I definitely do take pride in overall rank, and I definitely do take pride in massive data rank as well. I mean, it's a nice way to look at yourself and at the game you invest a lot of time in, that okay, so maybe I'm doing something good.
Yeah, that's totally actually like could have been my answer as well, actually. Yeah, just took the words right out of my mouth a lot of the time. And nice segue, do you think, Simon? Seems like a natural move into maybe asking you, Rob, about like your interest in stats, and like this seems to be something that you're kind of taking a more serious like interest in, and you've been producing loads of cool stuff recently and learning different like software and programming languages and stuff like that. Do you want to talk a bit about like what your interest is and what kind of a journey you've been on recently with that stuff?
I sort of built my own model at the end of the last season. That was when I was still using Power BI. And I sort of refined it, if you can call it like that, this season, and that's why I'm also a little bit more confident in the team projections. But overall, I just want to find out whether like over the season the rather naive team model I have built is capable of being in the same ballpark as some of the best team models out there in the Twitter sphere. And recently I have discovered coding with Python, and yeah, it changed a lot. So now I would migrate everything I have in Power BI just to have it in Python, but I'm not there yet. But it has opened so many possibilities, and I think I have, like, in the past 3 months I have learned as much as maybe in past 3 years. I don't know, it was a very intense experience, and it still is, and I'm enjoying it a lot. And as I said, FPL has become a nice vehicle and motivation, maybe to some extent, to learn something really useful. But this stuff has definitely taken over. As I said, I almost forgot that there is FPL, and I don't even think about FPL anymore. Right now, I'm just trying to learn as much stuff as possible, and improve my analytical skills.
That's so cool.
It's been very cool to see over the last 3 months, because you've been posting a lot of the stuff you've been doing, and you can kind of see you've like started with like some simpler stuff, and you can see it getting like refined and getting more complicated as you've learned more. It's very cool to see. And I definitely recommend anyone who doesn't already follow Rob to go check out some of the visualizations. I think there's one which is just a really nice way of kind of seeing team strength. I think it's like XG 10 game average by month, adjusted for team strength. And you can kind of see like how like teams essentially like form is changing, or like a strength within the month. Form is a dirty word, is what I hear. It's some of the things like that are just like cool analytical ideas. So I definitely recommend everyone go check them out. One thing I did want to dig into is you said you built your own model. We like to go into kind of absurd levels of the weeds of models. I'm not going to ask you to do that today, but like, how does it work? Is it XG based? What's like yours about it?
Yeah, it's XG based, and actually, so there are two things or two moving parts, and one of it is just the team model and the team strength model, and the other is actually the player projections. So I think it was in summer I had this idea that I will maintain my own model, and I was just happy to be, you know, in the same ballpark as FPL Review when it comes to consulting my projections. But then I quickly realized that it's not so easy to maintain. As we all know, the X-Mins is a huge part of the model, and I haven't found a way to,
such a pain as well,
to make it reliable automatically. And it would require so much manual effort on my part that I pretty much dismissed it in early September or early October. Player projections, I will leave it to professionals. I mean, it's the projections are reasonably good for players that play often and play stable minutes, but any novelty, and I'm lost, to be honest, and I'm guessing base rates, and I don't like that. I mean, I don't have a refined process to be confident, like in posting these projections or something like that. So I just decided to play a kids game and do the team model and be happy with that. But this is something. I mean, per player projection, it's immensely difficult. From my perspective, to do reliably and to do confidently, and all my respect to anyone that maintains player projections and player model. It's lots and lots of detailed work, it's amazing feat that anyone who can maintain a model through the season and through a difficult season like this one as well, they all deserve a lot of recognition.
Yeah, I remember the messaging you about the expected minutes thing, and I was essentially, my solution came down to download the CSV from Review and try and do a VLOOKUP to sense check it to make sure my model wasn't wrong, which I don't think is a solution which I can call like my model in a meaningful sense at that point. But yeah, sorry I never shared it with you, Rob. I never finished it in the end.
Oh yeah, I remember now. Yeah, I asked you to send it to me. Okay.
Yeah, I haven't finished it. I will send it to you when I'm done though. Yeah, I mean, it'll be with you before episode 10 of The Corridor of Uncertainty.
Well, that's not saying much.
Yeah, I will not continue with play projections, so don't worry about it.
I was going to ask, just like, how did you get into Python, and like, what resources have you been using? Because people might find that interesting to hear about.
I think it was January last year that I came across this script from FF Trout, and it was written in Python, and it was like the scraping script for FBref data, and it was like my first real encounter with Python, and I was like, okay, I need to learn this stuff someday. I mean, I'm still not there yet, by the way, but I was so impressed, and I told myself, okay, this is the way to go. But yeah, as you can imagine, it's not so easy, especially if you have a daily job and stuff. So it took me a while to actually start. What sort of helped me was that I was on a paternity leave this last 5 months, so I finally found time to focus and to give it a go. I think I actually talked to you about this, Jamie, maybe 2 years ago, that I was also I was very impressed with things you can do with R. The thing that most attracted to me was the freedom you have with building your visualization. I mean, you are not limited by some software that's already that has some predefined style and type of visualizations and stuff. So this was very attractive. This was one of the things I wanted to achieve. And and actually it still is. I mean, right now with Simon, we are also, doing some other stuff as well, more data science-y. But the visual part was the most attractive thing to me. So I just wanted to create things that would communicate ideas about football, just the way I would imagine them. And I never had this freedom using any tool. So Python was the logical choice, because I read many times that it's relatively easy syntax. I think it's easy syntax, to be honest. So the learning curve is pretty steep, and you can do amazing things. So it was a clear choice, and yeah, I would definitely. If anyone feels similar to me, I would definitely encourage you to just pick random tutorial on any site and just start. My idea always was consistency over intensity. So I knew I would be able to do half an hour, maybe hour a day. But I knew I had to do it every day. I needed to build a habit. Like, okay, I haven't had my half an hour today. And as it often is, then you sit behind the computer for hours, because when you start something, it just happens naturally that you start focusing and things start to happen. And I think the initial part is the toughest one. Like at the start, you will be able to do close to nothing. You won't understand much, but this will quickly change. And I think with Python, it changes like in a month time. Anyone can really do stuff. Do like really do something.
Well, thank you. That's such a really inspiring stuff, actually, that Robin. Just like, well done. It's just so cool that you've taught yourself that, and the stuff that you're producing is awesome. And yeah, like, also congratulations on being the only person who ever managed to get anything done on paternity leave. that's a big win as well. But yeah, like, keep going, man. It's really, really cool. And I'm sure you'll be inspiring a lot of other people as well. So yeah, thanks for that.
Yeah, I'd echo all of that.
Thank you, guys.
No worries. Well deserved. Okay, welcome back to the Corridor of Uncertainty podcast. We are going to talk about the hive mind. Now, you probably don't know what the hive mind is, but at the start of the season, to kind of like pull back the curtain for listeners here, we have like a group chat with some of the managers who are like kind of analytically minded. And in that, I can't remember who actually, I had the idea to run a hive mind team. And those who were interested, we kind of like set up a little like DM group on Twitter, and we decided to run a team collectively. We can talk about this publicly now, even though it's against the FBI rules, because it got hacked. RIP, it was a victim of the hack, very, very sadly. But that's not why we're going to chat about it. So to kind of give a bit of background for everyone, what we did is we like did a democratically run FPL team from about like 25-ish kind of analytics FPL managers. And I wanted to chat about it both because I think it deserves a bit of a send-off because it was a really cool project. And I think FPL Towers, you're not listening, we'll probably do it again next year. But also I learned a lot about how to play the game because you kind of like come in with ideas and then like there'll be like countervailing ideas for your like same team. So a lot of the time you get into like an FPL discussion, it's like, well, it's team dependent, but here you're all kind of like working from the same position. So you're kind of like, you have all the different thought processes like for your team. And I learned a lot. So I thought it was just something I wanted to like bring up and discuss. I don't have a plan of exactly like how it's going to turn into content as usual. but Rob and Jamie were both kind of like in that group of like 25-ish odd like people on Twitter. Did you guys learn anything or was it just me? That's how I'm going to open it up.
Where are you in it, Rob?
Yeah, I was there. I probably wasn't very vocal, but yeah.
Yeah, I couldn't remember, yeah.
God, what a burn, Jimmy.
Were you even there? So just from the, for starters, it was, I believe it was Emma at Jump the Wave who came up with the kind of idea, like who suggested it formally. So just so we credit her there for that. She was kind of like the driving force behind it. I thought it was cool. I mean, I think you can learn a lot from just talking to other managers and hearing how other managers think. And definitely I did learn a lot when I started doing that, like when I joined Twitter and stuff, and you know, it was it kind of rocked the boat a lot. I remember thinking at the time with things that I had, you know, come to believe myself, and yeah, I think it's like a really recommendable thing to do, and I just found it like an interesting thing. I was quite interested in how the kind of how the actual decision making process would happen, like the sort of democratic kind of form that it would take, but we also, it was quite interesting that we were like doing really well as well. We were kind of smashing it.
Yeah, I think we were like 12k when the team got hacked.
Yeah, and we were just like kind of pretty laid back, I think, in the way that it was played, wasn't it? We weren't doing anything kind of too funky. It was just, you know, when you got all these, you got this combination of different opinions, and it did just kind of, you did just get a wisdom of a crowd thing coming through, and you'd end up making very sober decisions normally. I mean, there was one week that I took off, and we ended up with Lamptey on the wild card, but I mean, normally, apart from that, the decisions were pretty sound, I thought.
Hey, I'm taking that as a personal attack.
It definitely is.
I think it was genuinely boring team, and it was mind blowing how well it went. So I definitely learned something there as well, that if you have a few, or I don't know, if you have a couple of really good managers together, let's say, even though it was 10 or I don't know how many, that you sort of, I think all of us sort of tend to maybe have this inclination to do extreme stuff on some of the game weeks. And this sort of way or this method really smoothed out the rough edges, and it was really nice to see how good the team actually was. So yeah, I think it should motivate us to talk about FPL with each other more, I guess. I mean, like the real decision making. Yeah? You know what I mean?
Yeah, and like often I think when we come to the table to talk about a decision, we may have sort of like partly made it already, and we kind of present like quite a partisan argument, and we're not really, really willing for our mind to be changed. You know, like we're just saying, this is what I'm doing and this is why. But in the group, you don't have that luxury because it's not your decision to make. You know, you actually had to consider other points of view. You had to face game weeks where the decision that was made was actually not the one that you would have made yourself, and like be at peace with it, and like kind of and like that was quite interesting and quite sort of humbling to see that happen and for it to succeed. What did you get out of it, Simon? Do you remember like anything in particular?
Yeah, there was a few things. I think, like you've touched upon, the psychology of the decision making was just fun, I think. Sending a message on Christmas Day being like, are we still going to free hit tomorrow? was just like a complete laugh. I mean, it turned out to be the last thing that the team ever did. I guess it was a good way to send it off, just with the complete chaos of trying to put a free hit together on Christmas Day. On FPL, though, actually, no, before I get to FPL, I think, like you were saying around accepting when the kind of like vote didn't go with your suggestion, it was also interesting to note how like basically everyone in the group there was like very mature and there was no arseholes. I can imagine a hive mind team with like 25 randomly picked people would not quite be such a harmonious experience, and could be quite funny to watch. So also just a big shout out to everyone that was in it. It was like a very cool experience to see psychologically. From a FPL perspective, I think you kind of covered off the main things. I think like Rob, you put it really nicely when you said like taking off the rough edges. It was kind of like the exact phrase that I had in my head. And I think it should, like you say, inspire us to kind of chat to each other. And again, I'll pull back the curtain a bit for the listeners. So us three, like have a little like group chat with the three other people where we, not every week, but sometimes when we've got like little dilemmas, we'll go and like use it as a like sense check. And that like arose after the hive mind. And I find that super helpful. And it kind of just really emphasized to me the importance of avoiding catastrophic mistakes as a way to do well in FPL.
Yeah, definitely.
I was thinking that as well, that exact same thing.
Yeah, it's much more so. I don't know, I think Arnie or maybe Stefan Hawksrud, one of the two.
It's Arne.
Yeah, he's got like Arne's got a phrase called fancy play syndrome, where you kind of, you have like, you've got like too fancy and you think you've found like a clever little edge, but actually you've just kind of like screwed yourself over. And there's just a lot to be said for like keeping it simple, playing the like smart consensus way, and you'll do really well at the game.
Yeah, for sure. Like, think something about something that I think distinguishes very successful players is this ability to avoid mistakes, right? And that just seems to be something that they have in common. And it kind of makes sense because we don't actually really make that many proactive, meaningful decisions over the course of a year. We probably make roughly 38 transfers, you know, and like a captaincy call every week and a couple of things around chips. But a lot of, like, so much of the effort goes around the off the page stuff, and just the ability to make sure that like you're not making blunders in the moves that you actually do make seems to be something that is a really nice trait to have. And like having other people just check you seems to be like a really good way of achieving that.
I definitely agree. I think it has a lot of added value to talk about FPL in this way. Maybe not a really like a group chat with a lot of people, but a few people you trust and you want to talk about it, like in very fine detail about your team. And I would say I see two main advantages. The first is that obviously other people will give you feedback on any decision you are going to make, and that's pretty self-evident. But also maybe a little bit hidden is that you will need to articulate why you are doing the transfer that you are going to do, and what does it actually mean for your team in the coming weeks, and what's the plan. You know, so, I mean, if you need to present your transfer plan to other people, you sort of need to put it in a way that prompts you to think about your team, I think, even more deeply than if you would just, you know, think for yourself, because obviously you don't need to present your idea to yourself. But once you have to, I think you think about it more deeply. It happened to me a few times that actually when I articulated my plan, it didn't sound good at all. It had issues, you know, like coming down the line and maybe in 2 weeks or something that I haven't really thought about. And then obviously a lot of valuable feedback. I think it's genuinely it's a revelation for me this season to talk about transfers this intensively. Let's say I haven't done that before.
That's such a good point. It's such a good point. I've said in like other domains apart from FPL repeatedly that if you really want to know what you don't understand about something, then try and teach it. And that's exactly what you're saying here, but with your transfer plan. Like the act of explaining really shows you the gaps that you have in it. It's such a good point. So true.
Yeah, love it as well. Like you can bullshit yourself pretty easily, you know. It's quite easy to kid yourself into thinking something's a good idea, but you can't bullshit other people. So yeah, it's a really good point.
So I'm going to chat a little bit around the FPL landscape. We figured that essentially transfers isn't good content. Everyone's team is really different. And what you're going to do depends kind of like loads on your team. But I think it's kind of like worth thinking through the kind of like higher level contours of like how you come up with the chip strategy. So there's 4 or 5 chips, depending on whether you've got one free hit or two. I'm assuming people have not already spent their triple captain bench boost and wild card. Sorry if that's you. There's always next year. And I think there's going to be quite a lot of like divergent strategies. Obviously, there's a lot of doubles that we don't know where they're going. We know there's going to be the FA Cup ones as per usual in like a normal season. And we've also got these 15 unscheduled fixtures. We think we probably won't have many more postponements, kind of given the Premier League's changed their rules around what it takes to get a game postponed. And it looks like the COVID rates, well, they were dropping quickly, they're now dropping slowly, but they're not going up, which should reduce the number of postponements as well as just be a great thing overall. Jamie, you played your wild card in 19, pretty late.
Yep.
You've still got everything in hand. You haven't spent your first free hit.
No.
How do you think about formulating a strategy, and like, what would it take for you to do something different?
Well, I mean, I've got to say that this is normally one of the things that I enjoy the most about playing FPL, is like using the chips in the best way. And, you know, I'm sure that you guys will have had the same experience, which is that you tend to have a situation where your rank like improves as the season goes on. And like part of that is just like continued good decision making, and you're kind of making your way past some teams who are maybe like less experienced or had got a bit lucky at the start or whatnot, or lost interest. But another thing I think is like the chip strategy. Some people tend to use their chips up front, and it's kind of like this false impression that you get from the overall rankings. And like the only time that you ever get an actual fair view of everyone's season is after game week 38 is finished. So I do tend to like hoard chips. It's just like something that I tend to do. And this season, rather than having like a detailed, clever plan about anything. I have just been very much taking like a helicopter view, like very, very detached. And part of that is just because of like disengagement, disinterest, disgust. And part of that is just because, like, you know, it's kind of sensible to be like that, I think, because things are so uncertain that, you know, you could either go like in deeper or you can kind of like pull back. And so I've decided to sort of pull back. And I've been really enjoying it, chatting with a couple of people a lot about like just general things, and like all the moves that I make is like, does it pass the sniff test? Is it, you know, does it like sound like a sort of sensible thing to be doing, rather than like the fine detail of it? And so in terms of chips, I don't have much of a strategy apart from, because I've got them all, I guess I will use like try and bench boost in the big double at the end and just use the wild card before that. And that means I've got two free hits and a triple captain to use between now and the end of the season. And I guess there is a big blank in, is it 30?
Yeah, that's correct.
Yeah, that's FA Cup, the fifth round.
So, I mean, that sounds easy to use. Like, I really like planning my transfers in advance and using them in service of supporting, like, a chip like that, and, like, actually transferring my way around it, because, again, it narrows this scope of, like, possible moves I could make, and I like that. It's simplifying. But this time I'll probably just make the simplifying decision to free hit in that week and not do anything smart or planned in advance to prepare for game week 30.
Yeah, me neither.
But I don't know when I'll use my other free hit. And that could be a problem for me, I suppose, is like getting the value out of it. I really don't know what I'll do with that. So, yeah, how does that sound to you? Did you use a free hit, Simon?
Yeah, I used one in 19. I got a red arrow 2 seasons in a row.
Yeah, sweet. That's how we do it.
Hey, but I got like a good expected point. So that's the real game. FPL is the game within a game of massive data rank, just for the record.
That's right.
Yeah, sounds legit.
Rob, how about you?
I still have all the chips, and I struggle the same way Jamie does. So I think I'm more clear about free hit 30. So that sounds like a no-brainer. Although we don't know how many teams will blank, but supposedly that there will be a lot of teams that will blank, and I just don't want to plan around it at all. So I will reserve one free hit for 30, I think, already. And then obviously a wild card somewhere close to the big double, which should be 36, where I will play the bench boost. So ideally wild card 34 or 35, as close to the double, to the big double as possible. I mean, this is probably the only thing I'm sure of, actually. The free hit, the second free hit, I don't know, penciled in 27, but I'm not sure. Let's see. Maybe my team will be in a good shape and I don't need to use it. Maybe not. And triple captain, well, it sounds increasingly likely that we are all going to use it in game week 26. So, yeah, let's see. But I think the biggest pain will be the second free hit, actually.
Interesting. Yeah, I've got one, and I kind of wish I had two. I don't think you'll have too much of an issue finding a place for a free hit. So I only have one left, and I really don't want to use it in game week 30. There's a pretty reasonable chance that I'd do it anyway, but I think we're likely to have double game weeks, kind of most weeks from 32 to 36.
Oh boy.
Right? Like four, maybe five in a row. And I feel like a free hit's going to be really valuable there, because there's going to be some back-to-back, like, double game weeks, which are different teams, and it's going to be a much harder transition than just like a game week 30 with like four teams in. I don't know exactly what I'd do if I had two. Because I know you can't play them in consecutive game weeks, right? So you can't play like free hit 31, free hit 32, wild card 33 or something like ridiculous. I mean, it makes sense that people are kind of focusing on the information that's known, but there's going to be like, we know there's going to be a lot of chaos, like for sure. We don't know what the chaos is going to look like, but we know that like it's going to be an absolute clusterfuck. And therefore, free hits are going to be really, really valuable in that like late period as well. In my head, I'm trying to work out like how much can I, or like how much is it worth sacrificing in 30 to try to use my free hit at a double. And obviously, the later I leave it with that decision, the less I can plan for game week 30. So it's not easy to use your chips efficiently this year, given the amount of uncertainty. I don't regret using the free hit in game week 19. Like I got like a solid like 20 expected points out of it. Variance is variance, so like it didn't turn into actual points. But like I'm kind of like comfortable with that decision. But I think there's a lot of value in having two. And I think there's a lot of value in having one for the post 30 period, which I think is probably something that people aren't talking about as much as I think it's valuable. I don't know what you guys make of that.
I would just quickly say that there's definitely a threshold of number of fixtures that actually happen in game week 30. I mean, obviously, if we are talking about four fixtures or I don't know. Or even less, then the value of free hit is getting lower and lower. But I don't know how possible this scenario actually is that we would have a blank this massive. Let's see.
I think with two, I'd definitely put one in 30. I think with two, you're not going to probably find two better spots, but you might find one.
Yeah, it's interesting. I didn't know you couldn't play them back to back.
Yeah.
Why?
You can't.
Good question.
It'll be like a technical limitation, won't it? There's no like good reason for it. Like, they just can't do it. I didn't know that. fine.
It's useful to talk about FPL with other people. Yeah.
Yeah. So it seems. I mean, I just also one thing I feel obliged to say is that it is a load of shit that they gave us another free hit.
100%. It can get fucked.
What? Like, you know, you're playing a strategy game with like a certain amount of like, you know, the rules are set out at the start, and every decision that you make every week is based on your understanding of these rules that you have, you know, these chips that you have to use and stuff like that, and then they just give you another one. That's going to affect different people differently, you know. It's just so dumb. But anyway,
yeah, it was quite funny how they basically did it, because people were angry on Twitter and they did it, and people were angry on Twitter. It tickled me.
Yeah, it was good.
I'm assuming you guys aren't interested in free hit 27 then, which I've seen. Kind of like talked about.
I still think about it. Let's see. I haven't ruled it out yet.
Yeah. What's happening in 27? Liverpool and Chelsea are playing the cup final, and that means Arsenal and Leicester get a blank as well. Okay, so they're quite big, sort of well-owned teams and stuff like that. So
yeah, I have one Arsenal player, two Chelsea players. On top of Liverpool players, so I think I might find it useful to play it in 27, but I don't know.
Me too, maybe. Yeah, I think I've got six altogether from those two teams, or I will do once I have Salah again. So yeah, it could be worthwhile.
Yeah, I'll get jealous if like the Chelsea Arsenal postponement goes into 28, then I'll be really screwed. Okay, so we're going to leave it there. That's the end of episode 9 of the Corridor of Uncertainty podcast. You can expect episode 10 next month. I hear February is a short month, but who knows in 2022? The world's a pretty crazy place. It could be a long one again.
It could be a bumper month.
Although, it's like a, does 100-sided dice land on 100 very often?
This is the, I think this is the third podcast we've recorded in the year since we said last February could be a bumper month. So.
Well, I mean, given that it's been a year and we did three last year, I'm gonna go boldly and I'm gonna say that this year is gonna be a bumper year and we might get to four.
Fingers crossed.
Yeah.
Well, you said it.
I mean, I say a lot of things. Okay, we're rapidly descending into nonsense. So I'm going to say thank you so much, Rob, for coming on. It's been an absolute pleasure. I've learned a lot about how to play the game and had a really interesting chat. So thank you so much for coming on.
Thanks, guys, for the invitation. I hope you didn't learn a lot from me, though. There are better players and better people to learn from. Cheers.
I'll learn some modesty as well. It's not one of my it's not one of my traits. JV, anything else to say before we go?
No.
Cool. That's it, guys. Peace out. Happy game weeks. Bye.
Bye.
Bye bye.